Well, we're going to be looking at that passage which Ben just read for us. So please have your handouts open or your Bibles open to Matthew chapter 6. And on the inside of the handout, there's some space for you to take notes if you would like as well. You might find that helpful. Well, I wonder if you've heard about the successful businessman who's well known in the area, been involved in lots of successful investments and projects, drives a nice car, lives in a big house up on the hill. And the Rotary Club was trying to raise money to provide facilities for sick children in the area. So the secretary of the Rotary Club, Leanne, rang up this businessman to ask him if he'd like to support the project. And on the phone, she asked him whether he'd like to support, and he said to her, "Leanne, do you know that my mother is extremely ill at the moment and her medical bills are astronomical?" And Leanne said, "Oh no, sorry, I didn't know that." And "Leanne, do you know that my sister was in the Maldives last month and she died, and the family is still trying to get her body repatriated back to Australia at huge expense?" And Leanne said, "Oh, I'm sorry, I really didn't know that, I'm so sorry." "And Leanne, do you realise that I have a twin brother who has a severe disability and he's never been able to work?" And Leanne said, "Oh, look, I am so sorry, I did not know any of this." "So," the businessman said, "since I'm not giving money to any of them, what makes you think I'll give any money to you?" Now, we laugh because sometimes that is true of human nature, isn't it? It's funny because there are actually people like that, maybe not as shameless about it as that guy, but there are people who refuse to help even their own families because of greed. Greed is a really deadly danger. And Jesus spends a lot of time talking about the danger of greed, the danger of worshipping money. And that's what we're going to be looking at in our passage today. In this passage on the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus is teaching his disciples how to live as disciples for his kingdom, in contrast to the world's way of living. And he outlines three contrasts in this passage. The contrast between a wise investment and a foolish investment, that's point number one. The contrast between a good eye and a good heart versus a bad eye and a bad heart, contrast number two. And number three, the contrast between serving God and serving money. Well, actually, it's money personified. It's literally mammon. So let's look at the first of these alternatives, the contrast between a wise investment and a foolish investment. Some ways of using our money are really wise ways of using money, but other ways are just stupid. Have a look with me at verse 19. "Do not store up for yourselves treasures on earth, where moths and vermin destroy, and where thieves break in and steal. But store up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where moths and vermin do not destroy, and where thieves do not break in and steal." There's no point keeping your treasure in a place where it's going to be destroyed. There's no point spending your money on things that are going to become worthless. That's what will happen if you think that your money should be used for the things of this world. But if you use your money for the next world, if you store up treasure in heaven, then that treasure will last forever. Imagine you turn on the telly one night to watch the news at 6 p.m. and they're talking about how many dollars per barrel Tapas crude is at the moment. And you think, "Oh, I hate the finance stuff. It's so boring." So you change the channel. And over on that other channel, they're talking about how the stock market's in danger of collapsing because of the price of crude oil. And you think, "Oh, what's going on?" Normally they save this boring stuff for the end. And you change the channel again. And it's our Prime Minister, Malcolm Turnbull, and he's saying, "This is the greatest challenge the world has faced since the invention of the automobile. But Australia is up to the challenge." And on the ticker tape headline down the bottom, it says, world oil supply to dry up by the end of 2017. No more oil, no more petrol, no more diesel. So imagine you've taken that in, and the next day you're going to work and you're going past a car dealership, and they've got a big sign out the front, end of year sale, 30% off selected models. You'd be crazy to go in and buy a car, even if it's 30% off, if it's going to be completely worthless in 2 months' time, aren't you? You wouldn't want 30% off, you'd want 99% off, because at the start of next year, all it would be worth would be a scrap metal. If you knew that the money you spent on the car would be completely gone in 2 months, you wouldn't spend the money. I've got a car out the front of my house at the moment which keeps breaking down, and I've been weighing up whether I should pay money to get it fixed. It runs on petrol, and if I knew there was going to be no more petrol and it would just be a lump of metal, a rusting lump of metal in 2 months' time, no matter how cheap the fix was, I wouldn't bother getting it fixed. You'd have to be stupid to spend money on something which is very soon going to be worthless. Well, everything people treasure on earth will one day be worthless. It doesn't matter whether you've got a cheap car or a luxury car. They're both going to have the same value, zero. You spend money on a holiday, you won't get that money back. You can buy clothes, you can buy technology, you can buy new things for your house. And one day, you'll chuck them out. Or when they're cleaning up your estate, they'll chuck them out. It'll all be junk. And even the things we think are investments are not guaranteed. In Australia, lots of people, the family home is their investment. And we say things like, as safe as houses. But then we get weather events like the 2011 Queensland floods, which the media called an inland tsunami, because it destroyed houses that weren't even in flood zones. That's how severe this weather was. And there's no insurance. Not many people have insurance for flood. You could buy shares, and the stock market could crash. Just ask anyone who retired after the 2008 GFC what happened to their super. No wealth on earth is certain. And even if it was, you can't take it with you. There are no roof racks on hearses. But treasure in heaven, that is certain. That's what lasts for eternity. Well, how do you store up treasure in heaven? Now, if you're taking notes, you might want to write down 1, 2, 3, because I'm going to give 3 points on how to store up treasure in heaven. Number one, don't keep money for yourself, but give it to the poor. That's what Jesus starts with in this chapter, chapter 6 of Matthew. In verse 4, he says that when you give to the poor without blowing your own trumpet about it, then your Father who sees in secret will reward you. In Proverbs 19, verse 17, we read, whoever is kind to the poor lends to the Lord, and the Lord will reward him for what he has done. Giving to the poor is storing up treasure in heaven. Secondly, we can give to the work of the gospel. Now, lots of passages tell us to do this, but Philippians chapter 4 explains it most clearly in terms of its heavenly value. Paul is talking about how the Philippians have partnered with him in the gospel by giving financially to his ministry. And he says in verse 17, not that I desire your gifts. What I desire is that more be credited to your account. I have received full payment and have more than enough. I am amply supplied now that I have received from Epaphroditus the gifts you sent. They are a fragrant offering, an acceptable sacrifice, pleasing to God. Paul's a gospel-minded minister. He's thinking about treasure in heaven. He's thinking about what reward the Philippians will have more than he's thinking about his own financial needs as he ministers the gospel. And just on a personal note, I want to say thank you to all of you who contribute to the work of the gospel here at Mittagong, because it enables us to do gospel ministry here, and that is an enormous privilege. It's I think it's the best thing in the world to be a minister of the gospel of Jesus and take that gospel to others. And I really want to say thank you to those who, through your generosity, enable us to do that here. In Philippians 4, it says that giving to the gospel is storing up treasure in heaven. It's a fragrant offering. It's an acceptable sacrifice pleasing to God. This is what our building extension appeal is about. It's about asking people to store up treasure in heaven by contributing money to be used for things that will facilitate gospel ministry. But thirdly, we can store up treasure in heaven in non-financial ways by doing righteous actions that don't really have anything to do with money. We saw how Jesus said that giving to the poor will result in treasure in heaven. But if you look in this same chapter, God will reward us for sincere prayer and sincere fasting in verses 6 and 18. Or if you go back one chapter to Matthew chapter 5, verse 11, after Jesus has said all the blessings, he says, "Blessed are you when people insult you and persecute you and falsely say all kinds of evil against you because of me. Rejoice and be glad, because great is your reward in heaven. For in the same way they persecuted the prophets who were before you." Living God's way, doing what God wants, even when we're persecuted because of being followers of Jesus, is a way of storing up treasures in heaven. Our Old Testament reading, one of the verses says, "Do not wear yourself out to get rich. Have the wisdom to show restraint." I'm sure we've all heard about the proverbial workaholic father who thought he could buy his family's love, but it can't be done. When you want to love people, you have to give them more than money. You have to give them your time. And there's no such thing as quality time without quantity time. And that's as true in God's family, in the church, as it is in our own families. So we can store up treasure in heaven by not working excessive hours or not studying excessive hours trying to get rich, but by saying no to that and by saying yes to people. Not every Christian has to give up all their possessions, but every Christian has to give up ownership of all their possessions. All our possessions belong to God, and we're simply stewards of that and stewards of our things and our money in this life, and God has entrusted it to us. Let's now look at the second contrast that Jesus gives us, the choice between a good eye and heart and a bad eye and heart. Here Jesus goes one level deeper from what he's been saying about treasure, and he says that what you desire actually changes what's inside your heart. Have a look at verse 21. Verse 21. "For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. The eye is the lamp of the body. If your eyes are healthy, your whole body will be full of light. But if your eyes are unhealthy, the whole body will be full of darkness. If then the light within you is darkness, how great is that darkness?" We often like to think of ourselves as rational creatures, that when we know what's right in our minds, then that will just flow out in what our actions are, that we can change our behavior simply by changing our minds. But it doesn't always work. If it did, then we could just stop sin just by educating people. But actually, there's a two-way flow. Sometimes we are rational. Sometimes what we think comes out in what we want and what we choose to do. But actually, other times, what we want and what we choose to do actually flows back in and clogs up our mind, and it shapes the way we think in our minds. One of my favourite reformers was Thomas Cranmer. If you don't know who he was the Archbishop of Canterbury during the time of the Reformation. And he was basically the founder of having church in English. Now, he's enormously influential for Anglicans, but also enormously influential for all English-speaking Christians. Even in contemporary services or services in other denominations, they will use phrases and ways of speaking which Thomas Cranmer thought up 500 years ago. And he was a Bible man. You can see him holding the Bible in his hands. He's got books on the table. That's actually a pretty radical statement back then, because most bishops, when they got their painting done, they had their hands resting on pillows. But Cranmer is a Bible man. And his understanding of human nature, which he got from studying the Bible, has been summed up as this: what the heart desires, the will chooses, and the mind justifies. See, that's a reverse of when we think of ourselves as rational creatures. We like to think, oh, it's actually the mind which thinks through things and weighs it up and then decides what we do, and now what we want just matches perfectly with what our minds are thinking. But Cranmer says, no, actually, we know that we're sinful, and we know that it's what our desires are that the will chooses and what the mind will justify. Now, we could modify this a little bit based on what Jesus is saying in Matthew chapter 6, and we could say, what the eyes desire, the will chooses, and the mind justifies. The eyes are like the suction inlet for the heart, for the whole body. What you look at, what you desire with your eyes, that goes into your mind and into your whole body and shapes what's going on in there. And we know this, don't we? Now think about porn. There's an article in this month's Southern Cross, which is on the desk at the back, and it says that porn is the single greatest issue facing the church today, or suggests that. Think about that, the single greatest issue. There's lots of reasons why porn is a huge problem. It's secret. Anyone with a phone or a computer has unlimited access to it, and children are getting addicted to it. But one of the reasons why it's such a huge danger is that it changes the way users think. It changes what's in their minds. It changes their attitude to sex and relationships and violence and rape and sexism. What it does, it goes in through our eyes and infects our minds and changes us on the inside. Greed is also like that. The unhealthy eye that Jesus is talking about is a way of talking about greed. It's the greedy eye. It's the eye that looks at material things and desires material things. When you look at those things, those desires go in through your eyes, into your heart, into your mind. As an engineer, I love fast cars and fast motorbikes, and these days even fast bicycles. And I always used to read the Motor magazine and the Wheels magazine and the Motorbike magazine. I used to do it every month, and I'd buy it myself or I'd get it out from the library. And I stopped doing it because I realized that doing that all the time so frequently was actually affecting the way I think about material things. It was actually displacing contentment in my heart because I drove an old Commodore and it wasn't a V8. Now, it's not a sin to read Wheels magazine. There's nothing wrong with appreciating fast cars. But if that's what you're looking at, if that's what you're desiring, then that's what's going to take place inside your heart. You're not going to have contentment in your heart. And besides, these days it's not psychologically healthy to read about Ferraris and V8s when you've got a Korean van. Now, you might have no interest in cars, but your desire might be the nice house or the latest phone or the latest fashion or the expensive holiday or the nice restaurants and the food and the drink. But be careful, because they can get inside you through your eyes when you desire them. As you all know, it's tax time. Sorry to remind you if you still haven't done it. Don't worry, they won't go after you if they owe you money. They only go after you if you owe them money. Don't ask me how I know that. And I read the other day about a mother who took her daughter down to the shops. And this young girl was doing what kids normally do at the shop. She was picking up everything and she was swinging off the rail that divides up the checkouts and saying, "Can I hold the money? Can I hold the money?" And then a few seconds later, the mother was frantic. She was screaming out. She was shouting, "Help, help. She's choking on a coin. She's choking on a coin." And a man came over to the woman. She said, "Calm down. Give the girl to me. I've got experience with this sort of thing." And he bent the girl over and he put out his hand and he gave her a sharp whack between the shoulder blades, and out came this dollar into his hand. And the mother was just... Oh, she burst into tears. She was hugging her daughter and she said, "Oh, God bless you. Thank you so much. You saved my daughter's life." And he said, "Oh, don't worry about it." And she said, so are you an Ambo or a doctor or something?" And he said, "No, I work for the tax office." They want to get their money. They want that dollar. And some people are like that. It's what they live for too. I was watching a show about when they had prohibition in America, and it didn't work. America did have a huge drinking problem, but alcohol prohibition wasn't going to work. Even though people agreed that there was a big problem with alcohol and most people wanted something done about alcohol, most people thought that moderate drinking was okay, so they didn't really support the law. There were also people who said that prohibition was a religious movement which would have arrested Jesus for turning water into wine. And the other factor was it was too easy to bootleg liquor, and the market for bootleg liquor was too great. And what you had was you had these bootleg bosses becoming the richest men in America. One of them was George Remus, and he was going to rival Rockefeller for how much money he had. And someone asked him how he kept on getting away with trafficking alcohol. And his response was, "Every man has his price." He was bribing all the police in the city. He was bribing the police chief. He was bribing the city officials, the state officials. He would take annual trips to the White House with a briefcase full of cash to bribe them. Now, even though there was a law against it, it was socially accepted to buy liquor because most people didn't see anything wrong with it. They thought the law was a bad law. But it wasn't socially acceptable for officials to receive bribes. No one was saying, "Oh, look, we should be able to bribe officials." And yet the whole bootleg industry flourished because everyone accepted a bribe. At the end of the day, it was the almighty dollar which ruled people's lives. It's kind of ironic that on the American currency it says, "In God we trust." Well, what that episode of history taught is that no, it's not God they trust, it's money. They trust in money, they obey money. And this is our third choice that Jesus forces us to make, the choice between God and money. And that's the deepest contrast that Jesus presents us with. Have a look at verse 24. "No one can serve two masters. Either you will hate the one and love the other, or you'll be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve both God and money." Your God is whatever you love the most, whatever you trust the most, whatever you obey the most. And that means if you're a lover of money, if you trust in money for your future, for your financial security, and if you obey money by satisfying materialistic desires, storing up treasure on earth, then God is not your God. Money is your God. And you can't worship both. I think this is one of the most terrifying passages in the Bible about wealth. You cannot worship both God and money. All of us have to choose whether we're going to serve God or whether we're going to serve money. And most Australians choose money. Some people say we're not a religious society. Well, that's wrong. Australia is very religious. But our God is money. Mammon, materialism. It's the state-sponsored religion. And we'll see it very soon because the most important celebration in the materialist calendar is coming up. Christmas. And we set up religious shrines, not so much in churches or temples, but in shopping centres, which are the temples for materialism. They're the Sunday schools for materialism, where kids get their education in materialism, along with advertising on the TV. The children of Australia, who, let's face it, are some of the richest kids in the world, they'll be lining up to pray to Santa, to ask him for more material things for themselves. Even though the real Saint Nick, back centuries ago, what he was on about, he was on giving away material things, giving to the poor so that they could be clothed and eat and have a roof over their heads. I think Christians need to be very careful about Christmas and Christmas presents, because Jesus says you cannot serve God and money. The other way you see this come out in Australian society is our love affair and our addiction to gambling. As Melbourne Cup on Tuesday, I'd be pleased to know that in my current workplace we don't do an office sweep. But it's a tricky one to navigate if you are in a workplace like that. Do you say, oh no, I'm a Christian? Or do you say, look, it's just a bit of fun, like no one's going to lose their house over participating in the office sweep. It's not hard gambling. Or do you think to yourself, actually, if only I won big, if I put a few decent-sized bets and got a winning streak, or if only my Powerball numbers came up, or if only I got lucky in that jackpot lottery. If only what? I'd have more money that I could buy things that moth and vermin are going to destroy. I'd have more money so that I could spend more time looking with an unhealthy eye at things that I desire. I'd have more money that I could feel safe and secure for the future, knowing that, you know, I won't spend my retirement in poverty, trusting in money instead of trusting in God. It's a dangerous thing to want more money. You cannot serve God and money. I'm going to finish with a prayer which is from Proverbs 30, verse 8 and 9. I'd like you to write that down. It's a great prayer. Proverbs 30, verse 8 and 9, and look it up later on. But it's a prayer to God for money. But it's a prayer that he would give us what we need and not give us too much. It's a very wise prayer. Let me pray. Keep falsehood and lies far from me. Give me neither poverty nor riches, but give me only my daily bread. Otherwise I may have too much and disown you and say, who is the Lord? Or I may become poor and steal and so dishonour the name of my God. Amen.